Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'll be moderating today's webinar on how to compete with large agencies. The ARM industry has undergone a period of consolidation in recent years, and it can be more challenging for smaller agencies to try and compete with larger companies. But looking at the success that many small agencies are enjoying, it's definitely not impossible for a small agency to thrive today. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts with us who will share their stories and insights. This webinar is being generously sponsored by VOAPS. You'll get the chance to hear more from them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Kelly Parsons O'Brien is a third generation debt collector, having worked for the family business since 1994 when she was a freshman in high school. Kelly currently serves as the president for the California Association of Collectors. She's worked diligently to learn every aspect of the business in her over 23 years with Pacific Credit Services. Kelly has a passion for skip tracing and has spent many hours learning the skills of searching for people and talking to third parties to gain location information. Ed Sala is the owner of Acer Capital Recovery, a collection agency that specializes in medical and healthcare accounts, and has been an active member of the collections industry for nearly two decades, having worked his way up to owning his own collection agency. He has played an active role within ACA International and is a very respected member of the ARM industry. Roger Weiss is the Chief Operating Officer of CACI and also runs the Collections Coach. Roger has been involved in the collections industry since 1992 and is a frequent speaker at events and conferences. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. Finally, there is no video component to this webinar, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, don't worry, you're not missing anything. This is an audio-only event. With that, let's jump into today's discussion. And first, I thought maybe we should set the table a little bit and sort of talk about, you know, maybe what the differences are between large agencies and small agencies and how we're going to define those and sort of talk about that first. So, Roger, maybe we'll ask you the first question. What is the biggest difference you see between large agencies and smaller agencies?
More desks and more chairs.
Okay, primary. Done.
No. End of call. I'm going home. Hey, hi, everyone. Thanks for jumping on and listening to us for a while. The biggest differences that I see between large agencies and smaller agencies are resources, number one. Usually they have more staff that they can be more flexible with, and a lot of times more technology. Sometimes, though, that can cause a lot of latency for the large agencies, which allows the smaller agencies to be more nimble, in my opinion. The other thing that I see is a lot of times large agencies have a strategy or a perception of a strategy that because they're a large agency, they should only go after large clients, which may shave slightly a profit margin and or cost a lot of additional resource components, maybe a lot of additional certifications are required, where some smaller clients that also might be more profitable might not require certain certifications or compliance measures or have SLAs out the wazoo where you have to send, you know, 15 letters on every $8 account and above. So I think that there are a lot of differences, both real and perceived.
Excellent. Thanks. Ed, Kelly, anything else to add on top of that in terms of what you see among differences between large agencies and small agencies?
I'll speak. Everything Roger said was 100% correct. I like to think of smaller agencies being more of a boutique company. We're able to service our clients a lot faster. When they need something done, they know my direct phone number. You go to a larger agency, when they need something done, they go to a sales staff that may go to the collection manager, that may go up to a direct manager, that may go up to the CEO. So there's a lot of layers in a larger agency. So being more nimble allows me to have direct contact with every one of my clients.
Yeah, I agree with both of them. And I think there might be a little bit of a misconception that smaller agencies are local. And I think that's important kind of for everybody to understand is that you can reach countrywide. And, you know, I know lots of small agencies that are licensed in all 50 states. And so I think that, you know, although we're small, it doesn't mean that we can't reach to those bigger clients. And I think as we go through the questions, I think that we actually can collect better for some larger clients because that client is so valuable to us compared to maybe they're a little less valuable to that larger agency.
Agreed.
Sorry, I was just catching up with my notes. Excellent. Great start. So let's talk a little bit about that now, Kelly. How can a smaller agency convince a client that they can collect just as well as a larger agency?
So I think that both Ed and Roger made the point is that it's the personal touch. You know, for our office, the consumers have the same person that they can deal with regularly. We have, you know, a smaller collection staff. And then if there's somebody that's upset, they go right to my desk. You know, I take irate callers all day long and or somebody that's upset about something. And I think that's a way to kind of solve it. So we don't get a ton of CFPB complaints because of that. We have people set up that consumers can talk to that feel like we're empowered. We're empowered to make changes, to make things work for the consumer, to kind of deal with any type of issues. I think that's one of the big things that, you know, kind of sets us apart. I also think that we have more controls. So I think the larger agencies, and not working from a larger agency, so some of this is perceived, of course, but I think that the larger agencies have these big controls that they have in place, but I get to touch more accounts than probably a large agency owner would. So I can see that, hey, we have an issue with this client or something's going on here that may have been missed by somebody. And so I think that really gives us a bit of an advantage as a smaller agency than larger agencies, because the people that make decisions in our office are, you know, are touching the accounts more frequently than in a larger agency.
Mike, one word that I would like to offer everyone in addressing the question of how can we convince clients that we can collect just as well as larger agencies, I'm going to change that and say better than larger agencies. And this is not to discredit any larger agencies out there. I've got some very good friends that own and run large agencies, and they do an outstanding job. However, the word I want to offer is flagship. If you take a mid-sized rural hospital as an example, a smaller agency can make the claim and back it up that says ABC Hospital will be a flagship client to us, meaning it'll be a top 10 or 20 or 30 client to us. You're going to receive that immediate and important attention that any flagship client deserves. Whereas with larger agencies, you may get lost in the muddle a little bit, or you may not be as important as one of their flagship clients who may consist of 500 or 1,000 bed hospitals. And a lot of times, business office managers, revenue cycle managers, and what have you in healthcare alone, and I know the same is true in every vertical, they move around a lot in their own industry. So someone who used to run a large hospital or clinic may be running a smaller one now, or vice versa. So that statement sits well with them. It gives them a good perspective of where they would fall. And I think that it makes them understand that whatever resources we have, just as Kelly said, we're going to apply more intimately to a broader selection of those accounts, and we can speak more in depth about those accounts than someone who has 300 or 400 agents spinning and grinning, as we say, when they're shuffling accounts through automation, and that's about it.
Is it? I don't want to try and sort of paint all clients with a broad brush, because clearly there are different reasons. But does that attention really matter? I mean, is it, or are you sort of speaking to or appealing to their vanity that you're going to be my number one client? Or, you know, how do you sort of, can, you know, why does that matter so much? I guess, let me ask that. Let me put it to you that way. And maybe Ed, you can tackle that one first.
It absolutely matters. You know, if you go to a store and you're ignored the entire time that you're walking through a store, how many times do you visit that store again? If you go to a store and as soon as you walk in, you're greeted, you're asked how your day is going. You know, can I help you out? Is there anything I can do for you? There's a lot that goes into treating people that way than basically to ignore them. I come from a large agency. I come from one of the world's largest agencies. And I can tell you without a doubt, it's much easier being a smaller agency, speaking with clients one-on-one than it is to be behind a desk pushing accounts and not having that personal relationship. You know, when we would have a directive that came down, we wouldn't talk to the client directly. We'd have no idea, but everything was said, you know, 3 or 4 miles before that. So who knows if anything got lost in translation. Here we have a direct line to our client, and we can answer any questions and, you know, maybe strategize a little bit differently because they are our flagship client.
And I also think that we get calls all the time that say, well, I sent these accounts to so-and-so agency and I haven't heard from them. And I think that that's one thing that we really incorporate in our office and share with our staff is, you know, sometimes you're not going to collect, you know, a ton of money for a client, but if they're hearing from you and they know that you're working and they know that you're actively pursuing their accounts, it's going to go a lot farther than them sending the accounts each month. Maybe you're not recovering as much as you could be, oftentimes at no fault of your own, as we know. But I also think that having that constant communication and making sure that you are, you know, communicating with the client, what's going on, what you're finding on their accounts, really goes a long way, especially when you're having trouble with recovery. And so we really incorporate that in our process for our client services team to make sure that we're talking to the clients regularly and we hear their pain points. And oftentimes we can help them with some of those things that are an issue. Maybe it's, you know, how long they're holding on to the accounts. Maybe it's the way they're billing insurances. And we can really give them that support, which often helps that relationship and build it a little stronger.
But oftentimes you'll also have clients who are place it and forget it. You can try to reach out to them. Many times you don't get a response back. So that when you encounter clients like that, take a step back, try to visit them, try to meet them at their office and have a one-on-one face-to-face discussion.
Good point, Ed.
Excellent. Well, at this point, I'd like to invite Kirby Miller from BoApps to say a few words. Kirby?
Hey, thanks for the floor, Mike. We enjoy sponsoring webinars on accountsrecovery.net because a huge portion of our client base is always in attendance. Those listening that are not currently using direct drop voicemail have the opportunity to implement a game changer for their organization that will immediately improve collection results. In fact, during tax season, we send more direct drop voicemails than any other part of the year. VoApp's Direct Drop Voicemail is the patented technology to deliver voicemails to mobile consumers, and we do it without making a call. In lieu of your agents manually dialing, our clients employ Direct Drop Voicemail to complement their current contact strategy by delivering thousands of voicemails in a matter of minutes. The direct result is an immediate increase in inbound phone calls to your collection agents from debtors initiating resolution. It creates an improved experience for both the customer and collectors. Dollars collected, liquidation rates, human resource cost savings, and employee morale are an all-time high when direct drop voicemail is launched by agencies. New clients are up and running in less than 2 business days. We offer our service with no upfront or prepaid costs. VoApps can be launched with all collection software platforms, and we're the only company to back our clients with a one-of-a-kind, industry-specific joint legal defense plan, which gives our agencies the confidence to aggressively deliver voicemails, knowing they have the backing of their vendor. For immediate questions or to schedule a demo, check out voapps.com, or you can also email me, again, Kirby Miller. It's kirby.miller@voapps.com. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you, Kirby, and thanks again to Voapps for sponsoring today's webinar. On behalf of all of the credit and collection industry, let me thank you for helping promote this important educational platform.
Hey, Mike, now, this is Roger. If I could jump in just real quick on Kirby's heels there, I want to point out two very important things, and assuming that we've got a lot of smaller agencies on this call, guys, we're in the middle of tax time right now. Don't be fooled. It's no longer in March. We're seeing it earlier and earlier in every year. And even if you don't have an automated dialing system, or even if you don't use a dialer, you can use Voapps. I use Voapps, and it puts through the people who you want to talk to, so you can increase your agent's right party contacts overnight. And what they do with them at that point, it's up to you. But it's a great way to get those contacts just flooding in. I just wanted to let everyone know from a user's perspective, Mike. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Roger. Thank you. Was curious whether or not any of you think the type of debt being collected matters when considering the differences between a smaller or large agency. You know, for example, are smaller agencies or larger agencies better at collecting a certain type of debt compared with the other side?
I don't mind tackling that one. So I don't think specific types of debt. I think that small agencies can really work well in the larger client base. I think that the thing that I'm noticing is that smaller agencies have a little bit harder meeting the requirements for like the certain certifications. We know that there was a state of California RFP that went out not too long ago that required a huge amount of revenues per year, which a small agency really couldn't compete with. And we're looking at that from a California perspective, is that, you know, if the people that are writing these RFPs are making the insurance and the revenue requirements so large that small agencies can't even really compete for the business. So I think from that perspective is difficult, but I also feel like sometimes these RFPs are not written by people that actually understand what who is going to be responding to these RFPs. So for me, that was just kind of my thought takeaway, but I really don't think there's any other specific type of debt that we can't collect and can't do a great job, as Roger said, better than the larger agencies.
So Mike, I would add on to that. I definitely agree with what Kelly was saying. And I would go further as to say, I think that small agency versus large agency is not sometimes it's not the best measure. Let me give you an example. If you're scoring and segmenting accounts, and a lot of times, some of the large agencies that don't score it or segment the accounts will throw everything on a dialer, and some small agencies will do this too. However, if you get precise about how you're working the portfolios, we all know on this call that about 85% of our money comes from the top 30%, top three strata of accounts. And if we're working the accounts smart and not hard, and we have those conversations involving our client that explains, listen, we're going to put an incredible intense amount of work on this strata of accounts versus these lower stratas of accounts, because there's more money here and there's fewer bankruptcies, there's fewer disputes, there's less liability, there's less chance that we're gonna get sued from working these higher scored accounts as opposed to these lower scored accounts. Now, we're still gonna work the lower scored, just not as in depth or intense. A smaller agency with a great strategy and some really good collectors can move mountains, as opposed to just throwing people at it. I said, tongue in cheek, what's the difference between a large agency and a small agency? And I said, the desks and the chairs. Well, sometimes that's the truth, because a lot of times agencies just want to throw more and more people at it. And let's face it, with the entire industry, with margins shrinking on a daily basis, we have to be more creative and more effective at the efforts we put out. So having those conversations with the clients and making sure that they understand how you're going to work those accounts and how you're going to perform on those accounts is imperative to any success, regardless if it's a smaller or a larger agency. But I think it's a great strategy to deploy for smaller agencies competing against larger agencies.
Got it. Makes sense. Thanks. Wanted to present a couple of scenarios to the panel. And Ed, maybe we'll let you weigh in first this time. You're an executive at a smaller collection agency. You're trying to sell your services to a prospective client. The client references a competitor or mentions a competitor that is much bigger than your agency. And then the prospect comes out and asks, why should he go with you? What's your answer?
I love this question because we just went through this. Excuse me. Exact scenario. We asked this prospective client to remove the older accounts from the main agency, 100 accounts. We would tackle those accounts at no charge for 2 months, send out a 30-day letter, and then tackle it. We were able to resolve 22% of those accounts. I got the business. Sometimes you have to think outside the box in order to win a client. The next phone call I got was from the other agency. They weren't too happy with us, but it is what it is. So that's one of our scenarios, and it just happened recently.
Do you think that, I mean, is that a strategy you can replicate with other clients, or is that more of a one-off?
If given the chance, I think it was not a one-off, but if given the chance to replicate that again, we can absolutely do it. But you have to have the trust of, we had to have the trust of the doctor in order to do this, revenue cycle manager, we had to have the trust of. They weren't just going to give us, you know, sign our BBA and walk away with us, but we had to gain their trust. They had to basically understand what our commitment was to them, and I believe we showed our commitment. But we also had conversations with them throughout the entire course. You know, we sent out triggers to them also. So if we have a dispute, they immediately know that there's a dispute, there's a trigger that goes to them. And then our conversations are one-on-one. The other agency didn't do that at all.
Excellent. Well, good job. Roger, Kelly, how would you answer that question?
I think that's a great idea, and I think that in the next scenario, similar to what I was talking about, is like 50%. Give us half the business for a period of time, and let us show you what we can do. I think sometimes I think it was Ed or Roger that had mentioned that these finance managers move from office to office or facility to facility, and so a lot of them know these bigger agencies and have worked with them, and so then they come in. I've had several times the client, they come into somebody I'm already doing business for, and they're like, well, I really would like to go back to this agency I'm comfortable with, and after we sit down and I show them what we're doing for them and how we value them as a client, and how important this client, the flagship client, I think Roger mentioned, is how important that client is to us and how successful we are and what we do for them. I think it really shows, in our office. I think the other thing that, we all talk about, kind of the CFPB's website talks a lot about complaints and how it's not really relative to the fact that, a larger agency is going to have more complaints. But I think that you can use that also to our benefit is showing, that this larger agency has a lot of complaints, and it's because they're not able to provide the level of service that we are to the consumers, which I think is really important. So I think kind of looking at it from the complaint perspective, especially those clients that are sensitive to complaints, I think has really helped us as well.
Mike, I would just resonate everything that was said. I love the idea of offering, give me 100 counts for free. and or, you know, I'll treat them for free. I love when I get that question, and we get that question frequently. And my simple answer is, I understand your trepidation. And then, as Kelly had stated and alluded to, but I understand your trepidation. I will tell you this. The reason you should go with us instead of the larger agency is because your population of accounts are more important to us than they are to the larger agency, and they're going to be treated as such with us, and I can't attest to what you'll receive from the larger agency. But a lot of times, I love going in up against the champion challenger. We'll offer things like start us out at 50% and then do a quarterly comparison, and each quarter give 5 or 10%, award an extra 5 or 10% of the placements to the other company. This will make sure that you're keeping everyone honest, and you can give the preponderance of the business to the best performing agency.
How does that usually go over with the clients, Roger? Is that something they're generally receptive to?
Well, it's all over the map. If you have a dartboard, sure. I can throw and hit every answer on the board. We have a few of those relationships right now. And in fact, after this call, I'm getting on a client call where we just high five here, won another quarter against a competitor. And it's a great feeling when we do that. Typically, I can't think historically of a time when we're a mid-size agency, but where we've gone up against especially a large national agency and been outperformed. So it doesn't go over 100% of the time. However, it more times than not, it's something for them to consider. And if it's a smaller client, the confidence and the presentation of that idea is enough to make them consider, why would this guy offer something if it's going to make him look bad? And a lot of times they'll choose to go with us. And that's not to say that we win every client we go after. That certainly isn't the case. But I think when we can gain that confidence and that trust, then we are able to make that kind of a relationship work.
And, you know, and I think to Roger's point, it's really in our office, it's so the staff involvement in that agency against agency interaction, and like being able to go back to your staff and tell them that their work is beating a larger agency. And, you know, we often compete with ourselves, and we compete with the numbers that we met last year, or last quarter. But not often do we get to go up against the agency next door, in the next agency, and tell the collectors that they're doing better than that. So from a motivation perspective, the staff really loves that, you know, up against another agency. We actually perform better for our clients when we're doing a 50-50, not only because we want to, but the staff is more motivated to kind of beat that other collection agency. So for staff motivation, it's actually worked really well.
Exactly, Kelly. I want to say also the motivation, for the smaller agencies going after those accounts, they're tied to those accounts. They have more of a personal relationship with that consumer. They're touching that account a couple times a week, where a big agency is touching that account once every 2 weeks, maybe, if that. You know, so they get used to us calling, or they get used to our relationships, and they'll want to resolve the accounts through us. And I think it's because we are a little bit more understanding. Bigger agencies are more like a boiler room, right? You know, it is what it is. It's, you got whistles and you got bells and you have this going on and that going on, and what's going on in the background? Is there a party? That's what it sounds like when you're with a big agency. You come to a smaller agency like mine, we're quiet, we got classical music going, and we're talking to a person because we want to sympathize with them to get the job done, the account resolved.
I wanted to just sort of clarify, but dig a little deeper. You know, we're talking about scenarios where it's one small agency against one large agency, but that's not always the case. What do you do when it's, you know, you're one of two or three small agencies going up, you know, and there's a large agency involved, and those two or three small agencies are all saying, oh, we're going to provide you great customer service. How do you sort of try and differentiate, you know, sort of further differentiate yourself then, as I struggle to get that word out?
That's easy for you to say, Mike.
Yes, it is.
So, first of all, I'm going to start out by throwing my obligatory plug in there for ACA Education. There are a ton of advantages that can be gained through your ACA International membership, and just using the website Search Point alone puts you light years ahead of a lot of your competition, because there are a lot of agencies out there, whereas they are members, they don't use the products at their disposal. There's a ton of training available through ACA International too. In addition to that, though, and the service that you provide, small agency versus small agency versus small agency, again, it's about getting it done. It's about building those personal relationships, those relationships of trust, and it's about communication. I learned this from one of my large agency friends, and she and her team run an excellent agency, and they run one of, if not the best, client services department that I've ever seen, one of the tops, and that is having multiple levels of client interaction. So I've adopted this, and I have this at the executive level. I have this at the sales level, and then not only at the operations level, but at the administrative level too. In fact, right before this call, I just sent an updated client contact sheet with my entire management's contact information on it and what they would reach out to that person for. And it's got their email, their desk phone, and their cell phone on there so that they can be in contact with them all of the time. And then I have my management team reach out to the clients proactively on occasion. We don't want to inundate them. Remember, this is something I'm very familiar with. Debt collections is the redheaded stepchild of pretty much anyone's revenue cycle, whether it be healthcare, student loans, automobile, or what have you. So we can't constantly inundate them. We're not the only game in town. But when you throw a good touch base out or an interesting nugget once in a while, that sets you apart from the industry. In my opinion, it's no different than, why would someone pay your collector versus paying the other 12 or 13 collectors that are calling them? It's because that collector sets them apart, sets themselves apart from the competition.
And I also, in our office, what we were having issues with was, like, the legal department would be calling the client, then the dispute department, and then maybe my collection department was contacting the client. So we centralized all of that communication through one person. So we have one contact person that would call for all the different departments. And so it created an environment where the client wasn't being contacted, you know, multiple times during a week. It was, you know, one communication with everything that we need. And the clients really appreciated that central communication. And then the person that's making these contacts also can handle status updates, anything else the client needs at that same time. And so that really helped us communicate more effectively with our clients, and they appreciated not the multiple communications since they are running their business.
I'm curious if you found that, you know, clients are slower or quicker, or does it really make a difference in whether they, you know, whether they make the decision to leave and place their accounts with another collection agency? Are they slower or faster to do it if the agency is smaller? You know, do you find them more willing to sort of move on to another agency, you know, quickly than if the agency was bigger?
I found that clients will move faster if we're servicing somebody they know. So if they have a contact, another medical facility, and they were a referral, they'll onboard with us faster. If it's a drawn out process where we're, you know, giving a sales pitch and we're going there to meet them, and it takes a little bit longer to get them in tune with what our desires for them to jump on with our company. But if we have a way to use one of our clients to speak for us or on our behalf that they already are comfortable with, most of the time we'll get that business pretty fast.
I would agree. Our referrals are definitely are usually the easiest sale that we have because the person they're getting referred from. So that's one of the things that we're communicating with our clients. You know, every now and again, we'll say, hey, is there anybody that you think could use our services? And really teaching your client services team to start opening those doors of referrals, not just depend on your sales team for all of your sales. Because I think that your current clients actually are your best cheerleaders, and they all go to the industry meetings and the industry dinners and things like that for their own business. And I think that they talk about, you know, who are you using for collections and making sure that they're having a great experience with us and they're ready to tell the, you know, their colleague about us, I think is really important.
What about going the other way? We talked, you know, Ed and Kelly, you talked about onboarding. What about when making a decision, if a client makes a decision to take their accounts away from a small agency or from your agency and go with someone else, do you find that they make that decision faster if you're smaller than somebody else, or is that not really a factor?
I don't know that it's a factor. We lost 50% of a client's business because a new person came in and was like, you know, I really believe in splitting the business. You know, you've had this business for, you know, 20 years and you've never had any competition. And at first I was a little like nervous, like, oh no, but I, you know, we did well and the large agency no longer has that 50% of the business. We have 100% back. And so I think that sometimes they're quick to leave. We lost a client because they were in Rotary with another collection agency owner in another city. You know, there's things like that that happen that I don't think that you have much control over. Especially, we were doing well, but it was strictly a personal relationship, and I don't think you're going to stop those. So I think those are the types of things that are going to happen. But I think that if you're serving your client well and performing well, I don't think I'm at risk of losing their business to a larger agency. Unless I do something really wrong or there's some kind of personal relationship, I think that, knock on wood as I say this, we've been lucky to keep our clients because we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're collecting, we're staying compliant, and we're giving them the service that they deserve.
I agree with Kelly. I think that it's all about managing that relationship. Inevitably, you have someone come in and they've got their guys or their team that they're going to go to because they have that long-term relationship. And sometimes we are that guy or are that team, and other times we're the victim of that. So it does boil down to the personal relationships. But as far as if something's just not going quite right, I think that boils down to the communication and how comfortable are they at talking to you about it. If they never hear from you and they don't know what's going on, then yeah, I think that they're going to be quick to pull the trigger. But if you've got a good relationship and an open dialogue with them, they're going to talk to you and give you some opportunity to make corrections and right the course to get things fixed. Because again, with us representing such a small population of their overall revenue picture, they don't want to change unless, again, they're bringing in, if someone new comes in and brings their own guy or own team in. Would be the main reason for them to change.
Excellent. Well, we've got a few questions that have come in that I wanted to throw out to the panel, just to kind of give my topics a break for a minute, but also to give everybody else a chance. If you have a question for Roger, Kelly, or Ed, or for any or all of them, please type it in now, and we'll try to get to it before we run out of time. But here's the first question. As a smaller agency, how difficult is it to move into a new vertical? Is that something that's harder if the agency is smaller?
I guess for our office, we're pretty diverse in the type of business that we collect. It really runs from the start to the finish of industries that we serve. And I really think that the most difficult challenge would probably be employee education. So that's one of the things for our new hire groups is, you know, we start them on the utilities, then we move them over to medical. And before we get them to like property management or the credit cards or the loans, each time time you're doing more education, because talking to a consumer is the same, motivating a consumer, that stuff's easy. It's really understanding the specifics of the type of accounts. As we hire millennials, sometimes they've never had an apartment. So teaching them like how the apartments work and why they're responsible for the damages that they did to the apartment, those types of things. So I would say that education is most difficult, and understanding the pain points of those industries that you're trying to get into. But I, at least for our office, we haven't really seen any specific issues on an industry that's difficult because we're small.
Yeah, I would say do your research on that vertical. Know it in and out before you try to plunge into that vertical. Make sure you have a good understanding of it.
I would agree with that. I would also contend that I think that it might be more challenging for a larger agency to move into a new vertical than a smaller agency to move into a new vertical, because you have to focus on learning that new vertical, but you have to learn it from top to bottom. And large agencies, again, a lot of times have that mindset that they're large, so they have to start large. And rather than starting with a small client and setting a mold and a model and then building from there, they want to bring a behemoth of a client on or bring a lot of market share on. They sometimes, I think, and this is my own perception, it could be totally wrong, but I think that they stand a strong chance of falling flat or losing money for an extended period of time because they pump resources at it trying to be big at the new vertical rather than try to plant the seed and grow it from the ground up.
Roger, I was going to bite off what you just said. You're right. What they do, what a lot of bigger agencies do, and there are some great agencies out there, especially large size, but what they do is they throw staff at it. Okay, guys, we're down liquidation at 3 basis points out of month 2. We need to have $15,000 collected within the next 2 weeks before the client close. And they'll push all their agents for that particular client just to get that close so they can win more market share. To where us as a smaller agency, right out the gate, we're already trying to impact that drop of business immediately. So we don't have to worry about that backlog of trying to play catch up. We're already there.
Excuse me. Yeah, fire drills are no fun, and fire drills like that don't make profit, that's for sure.
Not at all.
Excellent. Well, there's a couple of questions that have come in, probably something I should have addressed earlier, and I apologize for not doing that. But let's maybe talk a little bit about the definition of, now, how many collectors do you consider adequate for a small to mid-sized collection agency? We'll start with that one first.
I think the definition is based off of client placements. How many accounts do you have within your active accounts do you have within your system? And then from there, you can make your own determination of how many employees you need.
Well, and I kind of wonder if this question is kind of similar to the other question that says, like, what is our definition of small agency? So I would consider our office a small agency, and we have about 15 collectors on the floor at any one time. So that, at least in my office, that would be, and I would say large would be maybe 100 plus collectors. And I think, Roger, you said you would be like a mid-agency, right? Mid-size?
We are smack in the middle of that. I would also answer that question with this. I think it's going to, there's so many variables. This entire industry is built on a slide rule, really. It depends on how much revenue per desk you're making and how much you're needing. The business answer is as few as possible to effectively treat your business. And the other side of that business answer is every desk filled as long as you're making X dollars of revenue per desk. So it's going to really depend on how much you can do and you want to do. The example that I will use is, say, an agency with 10 collectors might be able to do $12,000 to $14,000 to $15,000 a month in revenue based on their desk. And then a new client comes in, but that new client is only going to yield $4,000 in revenue per desk, and they're going to need to add four additional people. So the agency owner and management and leadership team is going to have to decide, is that juice worth the squeeze of bringing in four additional people, building out workstations, configuring it, et cetera, to add $16,000 a month. So it could be worth it, and it might not be in that business model. I would just say that however you define that answer, and everyone's got to answer that for themselves, you have to deliberately answer that, not just fill up every seat because you have the seats available, but make sure every one of those seats is profitable. A long time ago, one of my role models in the industry, he told me, Raj, there's a big difference between being big and being profitable, and you have to decide what you want to do. Now, being the combination of both, that's great, but there's a lot of headaches to going with being big and profitable. So I would just say you have to deliberately answer that question.
Good information. Kelly, you brought up the topic of RFPs before. Here's a question. What do you do if your agency does not have a dedicated person to respond to or write RFPs?
Well, you put on your RFP hat, or you identify somebody to put on that hat. For a while, I was doing it. I think that the key is especially for a smaller agency, is maybe to come up with either go out to a vendor or somebody that can help you get yourself a template. I think that it's important. We've won many RFPs with not having that done, but I do know some agencies that had some success working with a marketing person to put together an RFP, and then they use that kind of as their template. Some of the feedback that I was given from some of the RFPs that we did win was that ours was simple. It was straightforward. It answered all the questions they wanted. It showed that we clearly could fulfill their obligations under the RFP, showed them how we were different, what kind of set us apart from the other RFP responses. So I think that once you get a template, many of the RFPs, especially if you're dealing with the same type of industry, are really going to be kind of, it's a cookie cutter. You're filling in the information. And so at least for our office and our responses, really it is going to require that somebody put that hat on for a period of time, get yourself a really good template. And then eventually you're just going to have to identify somebody that responds to them. And it is difficult when that's not your full-time gig, but at least in our experience, I don't think you need somebody that's full-time. Like I said, I've done it. Sometimes our salesperson does it. It really depends on how detailed they are. And then if we really want to respond, that's another thing, is we don't have to respond to everyone that comes in. I think to Roger's point is the work that's going to be necessary worth the profit that you're going to make? And that's kind of something that we deal with when we look at these RFPs, because sometimes it's not going to be worth it. Even the cost to respond to it may not be worth the business you're going to get from it.
Yeah, you know, I want to say right off of that, not every client is going to be a great client. Not just because you landed a client who may have a bunch of accounts for you now, they may not be a great client. You might be losing money. So pick and choose your clients accordingly. Make sure you do your research on a client, and make sure you're going to make money off it, because that's what we're here for, right? We don't make money, our door's closed. It's as simple as that. I lost my training, so go ahead. My train of thought.
It's okay. When you catch up to it, let me know.
Oh, I got it. The other okay. Thing, the RFP, call Mike Gibb. I'm sure he can help or find somebody to help. Honest to God, call him.
I owe Ed 10% of everything that comes in because of that now.
15 now.
I had a question that I wanted to ask, and I don't know, maybe I'm hoping each of you have a perspective you want to share, but there have been a large number of smaller agencies that have gone out of business or consolidated or been sold to bigger agencies. And a lot of times, one of the reasons, rising expenses. They just can't keep up. Expenses are insurance, compliance, legal, all those expenses are going through the roof and they can't keep up. Whereas a larger agency has an economy of scale, and maybe better equipped to manage those kinds of expenses. How do you, you know, how do you sort of deal with that dynamic, you know, as compliance costs are going up, as insurance are going up, as, you know, it's just becoming more expensive to run a business? How do you sort of manage that side of the business as you're competing with larger agencies?
So we've purchased a couple of agencies over the last few years, and what I was noticing is you're correct in the fact that costs is going up to be compliant. But I also think that there's, I'm a third generation debt collector. So I think that there's also this kind of like first and second generation that's not training the next person. So in both of our cases of the agencies we purchased, they just didn't have anybody to take the reins and kind of take over. And so I think that that's really, important, I think, as agency owners, is to get an exit plan. Like, think about who are you training to, you know, take over the business and kind of continue on the path, or, you know, don't sell before when it's too late. And so I think that that, at least in the two agencies we dealt with, it was kind of like, hey, I'm ready to get out, but I don't really know what else to do here. And so for us, it worked out really well. But I think they also could have done a better job getting themselves ready to get out of the business sooner. So.
Ed, Roger, anything else you want to add on top of that?
You either cut costs or you raise revenue. I mean, those are your two options. So we live in a new era where technology that we have currently wasn't deployed 5 years ago. When I first entered the industry 20 some years ago, to do what we're doing now, you need 10 people just to do what one person does. It's because of the automation. So try to automate as much as you can within the law. Two, don't be scared at times to raise your fee. It's okay to raise a fee. It's okay to go up, you know, a couple basis points. Clients will understand because their costs increase also, and their fees also increase. But do it to where you're not scaring them away. They can go to another agency that says, I'm going to drop my fees 5%. I'll take your business on for, you know, 19% versus the 25% that you're currently being charged. And just have that relationship with that client. Easiest way, because if you have to raise fees a couple basis points, it's a lot easier when you have a relationship to do so than it is just to arbitrarily raise fees and not talk to them about it, or just, you know, sending them over a letter or a new contract.
I had my mute on earlier, so I apologize. And I'm glad I did. To Ed's point, you don't fight on fees. Fight the battle on netback. What are you returning to them? If your state authorizes collection fees, make sure your clients have the proper verbiage in their documentation that the patient or the consumer signs off on, that allows you to add the collection fee and then set your table up to where your clients are getting a healthy net back based on what you're charging. If you just start cutting your fees, the very first thing that you're cutting is your profit. So therefore you have to cut services to maintain a profit margin, or all of a sudden you're in a cash management situation where you've got 1 or 2% profit margin, and that's pretty tough to exist on. And man, heaven help you if you hit a blip somewhere along the lines. So I would just make sure that you conscientiously price yourself. And as he also said, don't hesitate to have discussions with your clients that, hey, look, I can either cut your services or I can slightly raise, you know, increase your fees that you're paying me because this and this has changed and we have to do that. And then to Kelly's point, even if you're a one person shop, develop an exit strategy so you know where you're going. We always talk with collectors and salespeople about goal setting, and you have to have an action plan to get there. Well, an exit strategy is an action plan. And that exit strategy may include 3 or 4 different contingencies and 3 or 4 key indicators that say, oh, it's time for me to make a move. What am I going to do now? So that would be my thoughts on that, Mike.
You know, Mike, the other thing that I wanted to just add is from last year's Collector Live, a little plug there, Mary Shores talked about the words that work. And I know that Roger uses a lot of this in his office based on some of the trainings I've sat in on. And I think that it's important for us to, you know, look at how the consumer interaction is happening. A lot of agencies, I think, are losing opportunities because they want to work with the consumers the same way they've always worked with the consumers. And we can't do that. I think that's really important as an industry to look at the fact that we have to change. We have to be more customer service oriented. We have to work with the consumers. Each consumer has a limited amount of money, and they're going to spend it with the agency that works with them the most, that has the most pleasant interaction, that's the easiest to do business with. You know, having those portals that they can communicate with nobody, just them and their computer, those are technology things that we as smaller agencies have to implement. Otherwise, you're leaving a ton of money on the table.
I think in biting off with what Kelly just said, the regulators also have to come around and give us the opportunity to speak with people or communicate with consumers using those technologies. And they haven't come around on it yet. And I'd like to see them do it faster, especially like the sponsor that we have now. I'd like to see them all come around and say, this is a great idea. Everybody should be using it. But they haven't.
Yet. Thanks for the plug, Kelly. I will mention Collector Live next week. If you haven't signed up yet, Collector.live. Roger Weiss is a speaker. Bo Apps is a sponsor. 6 hours of great content. 16 or 17 speakers, all talking about issues and topics aimed directly at collection agents. So a one-of-a-kind conference available online, Collector.live. If you haven't heard anything about it, check it out today. Before we wrap up, I'd like to go around the panel and give each of you a chance to offer parting wisdom, a summary, any lasting thoughts, anything that you haven't had a chance to say but wanted to get out before we wrapped up, and we'll finish that way. Ed, you can go first.
Great. Thanks, Mike, for having me and us on this panel. I just wanted to part ways with saying smaller agencies such as ours, we're nimble. We can weave in and out at any time. Larger agencies, it's like turning a large ship around. It takes time and is very slow. So use the smallness of your agency as an advantage, not a disadvantage.
Excellent. Thank you. Roger?
Thanks, Mike. Great points, Ed. And I would just simply add to it, it is what you make it. You can choose to be a victim and say, well, I'm not a large agency, therefore I can't do this, 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 or this. You can be a survivor, and you can say, well, I'm getting by, but I'm just going to continue to lose profit margin and just eke by. Or you can choose to be a thriver and not figure out how to do things better, but figure out how to do them differently. Because when you do them differently, you're reinventing yourself, and that's where you can maintain healthy margins, a strong business model, and then develop that exit strategy that Kelly spoke about previously.
Excellent. Thank you. Kelly, the last word is yours.
Thank you. I think Ed and Roger summed it up perfectly. And I think that the one takeaway for me, at least on this, is that 100 accounts for free. I think it's a great example of how smaller agencies do often need to think outside the box and create an environment where we're showing them what we're capable of. Oftentimes, bigger agencies just have their name and that's enough. And I think that we need to often show them what we already know, that we're really great and that we can do just as much, if not more, than the larger agencies. So I think for me, that was my takeaway. And thank you, Ed, for that.
No, thanks. I appreciate that. It worked. Trust me, it works. it's good. It really is.
Well, at least I appreciate that as well. But sorry, before I let everybody go, I want to thank Ed, Roger, and Kelly for their insights and their time today. I'm constantly amazed that there's so many people along with these three who give their time to help educate and inform and share their knowledge and wisdom with their colleagues and their competitors. And I'm eternally grateful for that. Also wanted to thank VOAPS for sponsoring today's webinar. As Kirby said, please go to www.voapps.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions and listened and stuck around for the entire webinar. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their day. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.